again. Lovely to have your company at this end of August, nearly spring. First up this hour, a warning for our education system that attempting to mimic or copy so-called high-performing Asian countries is in fact a backward step. Leading educational researcher Dr. Yong Zhao says the move towards school and student rankings via standardised testing in countries like Australia comes as a number of Asian nations are trying to move away from such methods to embrace creativity and higher order thinking skills. In new comparative research compiled for the Mitchell Institute for Health and Education Policy, Dr. Zhao has examined shifts in education policy in Hong Kong, Korea, Singapore and Shanghai to ask what lessons we really should be learning from Asia. Yong Zhao is the director of the Institute for Global and Online Education at the University of Oregon, where he's also a professor in the Department of Educational Measurement, Policy and Leadership. He's the author, too, of World Class Learners, Educating Creative and Entrepreneurial Students, and the forthcoming Who's Afraid of the Big Bad Dragon? Why China Has the Best and Worst Education System in the World. It's a great title. That's going to be released in October this year. So welcome to Saturday Extra.
Thank you very much.
Transformation, you say, is underway in the nations you've examined. How would you sum up the shifts that are being made?
Well, I think, you know, it's probably in about three or two trends. One is the broadening or expanding of the definition of educational outcomes. Rethinking what qualities actually matter in our students. I think in Asian countries, they're moving away from simply testing scores to a lot more things like resilience, confidence, creativity, entrepreneur thinking, and those things. Another major shift, I think, from them in Asian countries is the reduction of student academic burdens, so they can children have more time to have fun, to enjoy life, to socialize, to learn other things. And another transformation is pedagogy, from transmitting of knowledge and information, from actually student-centered, allow more inquiry-based learning. And I think finally you can look at how they're also talking about utilizing new technology to bring in new pedagogy.
At the same time, we are moving towards a national curriculum here in Australia and a system of entrenched standardized testing. Have you come to believe that's an inherent mistake?
Definitely. I've written a lot about that. I think Australia is no different from the United States, where I have lived for the past over 20 years. And we're moving to the wrong direction to narrow the definition of education outcomes, to narrow what matters in our children's life, to narrow in what we think will be important qualities of our students. And the Asian countries, through so many years of focus on test scores, have learned lessons that they are not what's important for our children's future.
So the PISA scores, which have been so spectacular, particularly for Shanghai and Taiwan, are you saying that they don't necessarily add up to higher quality education? I mean, that great line that I heard is that the child of a cleaner in Shanghai was considerably better at maths than the child of a maths professor, maybe, or a professor in UK. You know, it's pretty dramatic stuff.
Well, the scores show that. Actually, I've written a lot about that, also in my new book, is that if you look at test scores, that's actually true. And but first of all, you know, does the PISA score truly measure math ability, or simply your ability to take a math test on the PISA? That's one of things. And another thing is that even that did measure, it's a 15-year-old math. And to get that score, what did you sacrifice? If you studied all the time for that score to get there, you wouldn't have foregone or opportunities to play with your friends, to develop social skills, to possibly develop your talent in music, in art, or in scientific thinking. And, you know, we should always look at the cost, the sacrifice in order for that score. I think that's a lesson Australia and other countries have not examined enough, the cost of high test scores.
Well, I suppose the other question is, are you really saying that this emphasis on maths, but it's part of STEM, which is the big new thing that we're rather poor on, that. Are you saying that that is too narrow? Because the word, you know, the story that we're being told is that that is the proper way to equip people for the adaptation required for this new computer age. Now, are you questioning that as well?
Yes, I think so. It's that, I mean, we should always need a lot of math talents, but we don't need everybody to be a mathematician. And also, school math sometimes do not necessarily teach you to be curious. I think sometimes, and there's another set of international studies I've examined, for example, called TIMSS, you know, which is really specific in the trends in international mathematics and science study, has shown, for example, Korea and Hong Kong, Singapore, you know, of great at math scores. By the way, they were great, you know, like 20, 30 years ago. And their students have no really little interest and or confidence in their math ability. And they don't value math as much as in the so-called low-scoring countries. Even if you score well on the math, but you have no interest and you don't value it, you have no confidence, it's unlikely you're going to pursue a career in math.
Mm, that is intriguing, isn't it? Well, instead, what do you put that down to? I mean, that's really odd what you've just said then, that they do very well, but they don't like it or they're not confident of applying it?
Yeah, PISA has the same result. Actually, if you look at Finland, you know, which we admired a lot before Shanghai came along, they have great test scores in science, on the PISA science, but their students' interest in science is considerably lower than most other countries out of the OECD group. So in a sense, I think what I think matters is children remain curious, confident about certain subjects. But also back to what you were talking about math, I think we have entered a society that we need a diversity of talents. I think we need a lot of artists, we need a lot of imaginative people, and STEM is just one area. But we, as any society wants to progress, we need a diversity of talents. We cannot discriminate against those who are interested in other subjects.
You also report that in Shanghai, a decision has been made to drop the OECD PISA as the government implements something called the green evaluation. How will that work?
Well, the report is so far that Shanghai is considering dropping that PISA. I think that might become true. They basically talk about how PISA narrowly measures the quality of education, of teaching of students, and they know that can guide a further narrowing of the curriculum and educational experiences, so they want to broaden that. And the green evaluation would include an assessment of how schools have taken care of children's, let's say, social-emotional well-being. Are students engaged? Are they physically healthy? So it's trying to broaden the school's responsibility to take care of the whole child rather than just simply going after some test scores.
Yes, you do point to a strong desire for those with means to move their children outside China's education system to the West, and that's certainly Australia's the beneficiary of that. Yeah. Is that indicating, would you say, a real sense of dissatisfaction with the Chinese system?
I would say so. Otherwise, why would you, you know, spend so much money and send your children thousands of miles away, and instead of trying to stay home, enjoying the free number one education system? So I think they're showing a much more reality check than what has been reported in some other media about what Asian systems have to offer.
My guest on Saturday Extra is a leading educational researcher, Dr. Yong Zhao, and he's been looking closely at the education systems of Hong Kong, Korea, Singapore and Shanghai at the invitation of the Mitchell Institute for Health and Education Policy. Okay, easing the pressure on students in the Asian system you've examined, you've already mentioned it, it's obviously a big focus. In Korea, they've ended the use of test scores, I understand, as the sole means of deciding entry to university. And of course, they have a terrible rate of student suicide and it's amazingly hothoused. What else is being done in this regard in terms of tutoring and homework, that sort of thing?
Well, you know, I know there's they're trying to control the amount of time. I think a few years ago, the Korean government issued an order to say no tutoring can pass over 10 o'clock at night or 10:30 at night. And they're also trying to broaden a lot more of what children can do, trying to reduce the pressure to succeed, you know, in one approach. And the same thing is happening in China, that they're trying to forbid schools and others to offer extra tutoring sessions in the summer or over vacation time and over weekends. And honestly, actually, it's not going very well because still there is tremendous cultural tradition and pressure to have children to be competitive academically.
Well, your findings indicate that family, cultural and Confucian values are what drives the success, whether the students are in Hong Kong, China, Singapore, Korea or Australia.
Right.
And I think you argue that these children will do well anywhere, no matter the system. So I sort of wonder whether particularly that Confucian drive, which is this great tradition of education and exams in China, is that something that you think the West should be copying?
Well, let me actually add that those values were make sure that children will do well in taking tests. You know, taking tests does not necessarily mean a good education. I think a good education is much more broader than what shows up on standardized testing. You know, I think in this study, as I cited, there's a research showing that Asian children, especially Chinese children in Australian schools, do as well on the PISA as students in Shanghai. So that means that our schools, in terms of if you're trying to beat down Australian schools, it doesn't seem to make sense. So why this group do well. So I think the cultural value can drive people to do well on taking tests because we think taking tests is very important in our life and to show that we've complied with authority. But I think in the 21st century, we need a very different kind of education. And that's why, by the way, the Asian parents are sending children to other countries, including Australia.
So in summary, what are the lessons then for Australia, Dr. Zhao?
Well, I think Australia had a good foundation in culturally speaking. We had a broader definition of education. So the best lesson, I think, for Australia is to think about not trying to copy the past of Asia, but trying to invent its future based on what it has. I think we face a very different society. We need to consider the future, not fixing the past. And, you know, learning Asia is trying to move away from its past. That's, you know, indicated by good test scores. They want to invent a future. So for Australia, we need to move forward, not looking backward.
Dr. Yong Zhao, thank you very much indeed. I've enjoyed speaking to you.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Yong Zhao, an education specialist at the University of Oregon, here in Australia as a Mitchell Professorial Fellow with the Mitchell Institute at Victoria University. And you can find out more from Dr. Zhao in a piece on the RN front page this morning as well.